This is ILTA Radio, the source for legal technology practices and ideas to help your career delivered to fit your busy schedule. ILTA Radio, get tuned in.
Welcome to another installation of our Technical Competency podcast for ILTA. My name is Beth Ann Stubbe, and I'm the Director of Publications and Press. And today I'm joined by Chris. Chris, welcome and thank you. Would you introduce yourself for us?
Sure. I'm Chris Niedringhaus. I am at Georgia State University College of Law in Atlanta, Georgia. I have a ridiculously long title, but I'm Associate Dean for the Law Library Information Services, Legal Technology and Innovation. I am also the faculty director of our Legal Analytics and Innovation Initiative, which is an exciting, fairly new initiative for us. And that ties in a lot with the technical competencies and what we're doing with students here at Georgia State.
I think it's really interesting that when we talk technical competency, we're in a period of shift in legal that I don't think we've quite seen before. And I think that that reaches things from the idea of ethics and morality, but over onto the side of, can we use change and innovation to beef up technical competency? So technical competency is the ABA Rule 1.1 for those listening who have had, you know, kind of joined along with us. It's not only keeping competency in abreast of areas of law that people, you know, practice in, but it's really keeping abreast of relevant technology as they represent clients. But I do think that this looks a little bit different from your perspective. Chris, can you talk to me about this in a law school, law, you know, kind of student setting?
Sure. So just as a little context, I have always been interested in technology. When I started out in my first job as a law librarian, my title was electronic services librarian, which at that point was, you know, a new job title for people who knew how to do technology things. And even at that time, and I feel that way about technology competency to this day, it bothered me that people thought I was the only one as an electronic services librarian who could do technology, because, I mean, I think we see now that it's a part of our everyday life. And so it's not technology competency, it's just competency. And I felt that way as a law librarian, and I feel that way teaching law students who are going to go out to practice. And so that's part of this Legal Analytics and Innovation Initiative that we have at Georgia State. It was actually started a few years ago by a couple of faculty, not me. I was part of the conversation, but they spearheaded it. And then I and another librarian here proposed different technology classes that were part of that program and that students could take to get their certificate in Legal Analytics and Innovation. And what I saw in my class was that the initial certificate that we had, and which we still have, is a very data coding, analytics heavy approach to innovation in legal tech. And that's incredibly valuable. But I also saw a lot of students who wanted something a little more generalized for technology, that they knew that they needed to know this information before they went out as attorneys. They wanted that knowledge. And so when I had the opportunity to take over the program as faculty director, we moved it into the library, created a new department. I've got some amazing folks teaching, and we've created a more generalized certificate program. And what we're trying to do in my ideal world and our ideal world is to get as many law students as possible geared up to understand the technology that they're going to have to use and geared up to know that they can learn the new technology, right? I mean, it's fine for us to teach them what's out there now, but they also have to know how to teach themselves about the new things that are coming out to keep up with things like ChatGPT or, you know, whatever it is. And so we are moving classes into that area, trying to reach as many students as we can. And that's my vision, that everyone, I find it a little sad that we had to have a separate comment to make technology competency a thing, because that should just be part of being a competent attorney, in my opinion.
Well, I was going to ask a little bit how your university was preparing people to kind of go into the workforce and, how tech competency for your universities very specifically had evolved. But I think you've done a really good job of explaining that it not only has evolved, but it will continue to evolve as the program matures. And I think that that's really important because then you're seeing how you are having to adapt to innovation that's already come around. ChatGPT, while it's all the rage, I remember when machine learning was all the rage. Luckily, I don't remember when microfiche was all the rage, but there's been a technical
I do.
competency. We'll cut that part out then. No, I'm gonna leave that. That's great. I do really enjoy the tool conversation for this isn't the only part of the innovation that you're having. But I think that there's something a little bit more important here. I think you're trying very hard to prepare would-be lawyers to practice in a workforce where they may not just be in that specific space anymore. Can we talk a little bit about things that you're doing to prepare them to go to places that may not be law firm specific, that may be sitting in a private market, banking or hospitals, because there's so many more places where lawyers are practicing but may not be appearing before a court.
Sure. I have some really great examples, even from just yesterday. So, one of the things that has come out of some of these classes, so for example, the class I created initially that was part of the program was a law practice technology class, kind of a survey class. Here's e-discovery. Let's talk about what it does. Let's talk about some different products and to get them familiar with the landscape. But one of the classes that I did that I loved, and I went in this past fall and did it in somebody else's class, is I ran a mock hackathon. So they all
That's
had to
awesome.
come. It's so much fun to do. They have to come with a pitch. So they do their pitch and then everybody in the room votes, and then the top vote getters, they form groups, and then they have a certain amount of time to go out and design their product. And I tell them it can either be, sort of modeled after the World Legal Hackathon. It can either be a private good, like for attorneys to help them do their job, or a public good to help self-represented. Or every single time I've done it, I am just amazed at the fantastic ideas that they come up with. It's so much fun. And it gives them the idea that they can do other things, that they can maybe develop a product and go work for a private firm or go work for an insurance company or a bank or whatever. And some of the classes, so we're, this is our last week of classes at the law school. And so this week I've gone to sit in on student presentations in a couple of our LAII classes. And so one was our legal analytics lab, and they did this project. I don't want to go into too much detail about it, but they did a project focused on SEC information. Really great and analytical work and interesting ideas that came out of it. And they actually had the opportunity to sit down with some folks from the SEC and talk to them about it, and do a presentation for them.
That's
And
cool.
then I also got yesterday, I went to, we have a new class. It was the first time it's taught. One of the fantastic people, Michelle Dewey, who is in our, legal analytics and innovation group. She developed a legal process engineering class. And so I got to go yesterday and watch their final presentations. And it just, they were, they're solving problems for real people. So one of the group of students was working with a wills and trust class, and they were helping them find a document automation solution. And then the other group was working with a product that people use in Georgia to do filings and stuff. And they actually developed and coded and wrote, developed a product that a firm in town is going to pay them this summer to work on and see if they can actually develop it into something that the firm wants to buy. And I'm like, this is amazing. All we have to do is give students the tools and the knowledge to be able to go out and do these things. It's so impressive. And, you know, in the class, Michelle is, she's teaching them sort of the structure for how to manage a project and all the sort of administrative things that people need to learn to then really make these great ideas come to fruition. And I am just always blown away by what the students come up with. It's so impressive. And I think that is exactly what we need people going into the legal field to do. Even if they don't want to be the product developer, they have to at least have enough knowledge to understand what they're talking about when they talk to the product vendor, and they need to know the right questions to ask. That is what we are doing here at Georgia State. And I would like to see, we're not the only places doing things like this, but I would like to see this much more widespread, because these folks are smart. We just need to give them the tools and let them, you know, come up with the solutions, and they can do that.
I think you're ethically preparing the next generation of lawyers, whatever side of the aisle they're going to sit on or not sit on.
Right.
My last question is going to focus a little bit more on kind of that ethics side. Mm-hmm. If we're sitting in the general world where ABA Rule 1.1 says that you must be technically competent, and we're preparing all of this innovation from the ChatGPT side to whatever else your students are going to come up with in the next couple of years, that innovation side, how do you think an ethics or honor code must evolve? And do you think that it kind of has to go back to the idea that maybe we're not just preparing them for tomorrow, we're preparing them for 5 years down the road? How do you think it will have to evolve?
So there's some differences between the ethics issues related to things like ChatGPT and all in practice versus as a student at a law school. So let me talk about them a little bit separately. They definitely relate to each other, but there's some different issues. So I think ethics are so important. And when I teach law practice technology, there's actually a part of every class that is reserved for an ethics conversation. We call it the ethics sidebar. So we'll talk about a particular type of technology, you know, whatever it is, document automation, e-discovery, whatever. And then we would reserve a part of the class to talk about ethical issues that might arise using that particular kind of technology. And we'll walk through that, make them actually read a license agreement, which I don't read license agreements when I download an app on my phone, but I'm not.
We probably should.
Right. And it's an eye-opening experience for them. And again, you know, the point that I try to make is they need to think about it. They need to be aware of it. And when they use a new product or a new piece of technology, they need to have that thought process of, what am I doing that might potentially be an issue, and how can I protect myself and my clients from that? Because the technology is going to change and we have to be able to adapt. And it's even small things. Like, I've done presentations for the Georgia Bar on technology ethics. And one of the things I ask people is, if you have notifications on your phone from a text message, do you allow it to display the first part of the text message? And if you do you think that's a problem? And then I watch everybody reach into their pocket or their bag and pull out their phone and get this sort of horrified look on their face. And so, you know, my point to the students is, you just have to think about that. It has to be a conscious process of thinking about, what am I doing? What risk does it present? And how do I mitigate that risk? Not to scare them into not using things, but so that they use them responsibly. And so I think that, you know, going into practice, and then I think because of that, we have an obligation to start talking to them about things like generative AI and how to use that responsibly. It's a little bit different in terms of the honor code in a law school, right? So this obviously came up, ChatGPT blew up, and people started thinking about what happens when a student asks ChatGPT or some other, you know, Google Bard or whatever to write their exam answer or write their paper for them. And I think for a lot of faculty, the response was sort of horror and a desire to just shut it down. You're not allowed to use it, period. Which I both understand that reaction and don't think that it's necessarily the right one. Because if we're going to teach them to use these things responsibly, then we need to teach them how to use them responsibly. But I also, as a kind of odd piece of context, what I did after I graduated from law school is worked as a university judicial administrator dealing with things like the honor code. So from my perspective, there is a part, and one of my colleagues said, why don't we just tell them that if they use it, they have to cite to it like they do anything else? And I do tend to like that answer, but I think that a lot of law faculty need more education about what these tools can do. Because the instinct to just prohibit it, I've seen proposed changes to the honor code that would actually, if interpreted the, you know, logically the way they're written, would actually prevent students from using things like Lexis and Westlaw, because faculty don't understand what's happening in the background of those searches. I think that we need some more faculty education about what the tools are and what they can do and how we can sort of preserve what we need to preserve in the law school, but also to be able to teach students how to use it responsibly to go out into practice or whatever they're going to do.
I think that's incredibly fair, but I also think that the ability for faculty at any age to continue their own technical competency journey has to play so much more heavily into this than it may currently.
Yeah. We may be in a good place for that. Because of the pandemic, a lot of faculty were forced to use technology that they had never used before. And some of them have discovered that it's not as hard and scary as it seemed, because it is. Not all the tools we use are intuitive or well-designed. And so, you know, but we did, we actually had here at Georgia State, when the pandemic started, we had some folks who volunteered or were volunteered to sort of help other people use the tools, because we do have ed tech staff at the law school, but there's not enough of them to get an entire faculty up to speed. And so we had these sort of peer coaches, and it really did help. And so I think I'm very optimistic about our ability to teach people and learn, but I've also seen a little bit, I'm not just talking about Georgia State, other faculty on listservs and everything, sort of this panic about ChatGPT and how that might affect their teaching and assessment, which I think is a fair concern, but we need to find a good balance there.
Well, we can probably end by, you know, the disclaimer that I imagine we, you know, 60 Minutes, I think, just used it saying that none of this program was written by ChatGPT. It was all human related.
Right.
Chris, this was awesome. I really enjoyed speaking with you. And I think that the conversation will continue to evolve from the university to the law school to the in-practice level. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
You've been listening to ILTA Radio. Subscribe to ILTA's podcasts through iTunes or Podbean and get alerted about new recordings. ILTA Radio, get tuned in.